All right, everybody, welcome back to the Strength Academy podcast. Grayson here, joined by Mundo.
What's up, y'all?
And we are on episode 48 or 47, or who knows, we have reached the functional capacity of our working memory to number these episodes. So I think we're on 48. I believe last week we did 46 for the second time.
Yeah, the numbering isn't as important to you guys, I'm sure, but like to us, we're just trying to keep track of what episode we posted and what number we're on, just for our own sake. But I think we're on 48 right now.
That sounds about right. And a little more housekeeping, if you hear either of us whimper or yell, it's because we're being attacked by Mundo's kitten. So Mundo's kitten, welcome, Pickle, to the podcast. You do you. Good job. All right. So I thought we'd kick things off with, we've got the World Championships coming up next week. And that's always kind of an exciting time of year. We finally got the TV put up in our gym, so yeah, we can stream the World Championships during training this week so that everybody can watch their favorite lifters compete. So I think I've been trying to think about what I'm the most excited about in this year's World Championships. And I think that first, I'm excited to have the prospects for the USA are looking really good. I'm excited. I think CJ Cummings will be in the running for a clean and jerk medal. He might do some impressive things in the total if that snatch is up there. Based on Kate Nye's 180 kilo back squat triple that she put up last week, I'm pretty excited to see just kind of where those things land. And then, of course, seeing Maddie and Kate compete. Maddie's first meet with Amy Everett as a coach.
Yeah.
Harrison Morris back from an injury. Sarah Robles doing strong things as usual. I think the USA team's looking pretty good this year. It's going to be kind of interesting to see.
Yeah, I think Jordan De La Cruz is on there, as well as Morgan King. And then Jason Bonick, John Downey, Nathan Dameron are all part of the team, as well as
Hunter. Is Hunter Elam
and
competing? Wetkiss,
and Hunter Elam is competing as well, yeah.
Yeah, so this is going to be a really cool... So we haven't seen which... you know, sessions and when exactly everybody's going to be on. And if you want a really, really in-depth covering of everybody that's going to be at the World Championships, that's not going to be this show, but check out the Two Doctors podcast. They just had Nat Arum and Gregor from All Things Gym on doing a whole world's preview. It's 2 hours long. So if you want to get into the weeds on some weightlifting and get all the gossip internationally, go ahead and check out that podcast. But out of the international lifters, I'm torn between two things.
Okay.
Seeing Mohamed Youssef and Liu Xiaojun compete again because of last year's Worlds, where Mohamed really came out of nowhere and took the snatch medal from Liu. I think based on the videos coming out from both of them, they're both pretty strong right now. And getting to see that rematch is going to be really kind of cool.
Yeah, I think that'll be a fantastic session to watch for sure. And then, I like to watch the 73s are probably my favorite, but I also like the 81s. I think Max Lang moved down to 73. Max Lang is one of my favorite weightlifters. He's from Germany. Technically, he's just very, very sharp, and then he's very strong, and he was an 81, but I think he moved down to 73 for the Worlds.
Yeah, and we'll see what session he is. I heard a rumor that he might actually be in a B session for that. We might have to watch everything just to get him in there. But yeah, so that's going to be really exciting, seeing him down in that weight class.
Yeah.
I think I might be most excited, though, about what Lasha Talakatsi is going to do.
Oh, yeah, that'll be good.
He's been breaking records every time he competes. I think at... the Nationals in Georgia, he put up unofficial world record total. And I have a feeling that he's going to be trying to take down that all-time clean and jerk. Like, I think he's going to go for a 264 or 265 and try to pair that up with maybe 219 or 220 in the snatch. I'm not sure if he'll try to break both in the same meet.
Right.
But it's just going to be really exciting. And just seeing, you know, how Mart Saim and those other supers are going to be pushing him and... who can even come close to him? Because I think, in the snatch, it's the Lasha show. Like, there's nobody that's really coming close to him there. So I think that's going to be pretty exciting to watch. It's always fun to watch the 89 kilo men, just because I think we're all biased towards our own weight right. classes that we compete in.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We're planning on watching it all week. I always like, it's like the, you know, it's the one time a year that we get to, you know, really have like a major, you know, international thing that more people kind of pay attention to, because it's hard to keep track of who did what at the Asian Games and what happened at this Pan Ams or Europeans. It's kind of hard for me to keep up with all that. I'm not the data guy who memorizes every single one, but I usually tune in for Worlds every year, and I'm excited to do that. I think it'll be fun. We've got some new people in the gym too that haven't, you know, gotten to watch. Like, they're new to competitive weightlifting, so it's always fun to make all those new folks get together and just see the best in the world.
I think it's important to kind of watch these people too, because like, this is the culmination of the pinnacle of our sport. Like, these are the best of the best. These are the representatives of each country that they want to try to put into the competition to see if they can, you know, beat the rest of the world. And so, like, these are the best lifters in the world. These are the best training systems that have developed over this long period of time that are contributing to producing these lifters. And so, like, it's important, if you participate in the sport at all, to see what the top level looks like. And so, like, I think it's a good idea to watch some of these people, how they, especially if they show how they warm up in the back, how they prepare for their competition. So, like, leading up to this competition right now, USA Weightlifting is showing training videos of the team in Tokyo and their lifts leading up to the competition, and how they adapt from the travel and the training during travel, and the different things that they get to do. So, like, there's a lot of aspects to the sport that you can delve into, and I think it's just interesting from that perspective as well. But also, just being a fan of the sport in general, like, this is the best time, like, to watch the best of the best do their thing on the world stage, and just have you know, a go at who's the strongest at currently in the world. So, like, I think it's such a great competition to watch. It can be really exciting, especially if we get another one of those episodes where we get Mohammed Iha Buhisef and, you know, Lu Zhaojun going back and forth on snatches and clean and jerks and things like that. So, like, if we have more competitions that end up being like that, even in some of the lower weight classes or higher weight classes, that's what makes it, you know, more exciting and more fun to watch. So,
and that's thanks for your contribution, Pickle. But yeah, I think one thing that, when you're new to weightlifting, sometimes watching the competition can be a little bit, like, if you haven't done meets and you don't understand how card shuffling works and how those changes in attempts
right.
play out, it can be a little bit less exciting. But if you've been in the sport for a little while, I think coaching especially, like, has made me, like, really appreciate, like, oh, he bumped it. He's going to force that guy to go right now. So if you have a better understanding of how the back room works, and they're doing a bit of a better job now when they cover it of showing, you know, the coaches in the back, kind of putting in those changes right. and making those calls.
The strategic aspects of weightlifting, not just, like, it's not just about making lifts, you know, that is part of it, but there's also, at this level, there's a strategic component to where, like, the timing of when you want your lifters to go, what will put them in medal contention, and what will keep them, you know, ahead of the rest of the field as far as that goes, you know. And that's all part of that backroom strategy. And that's why those guys like Mike Catone and
Piros
Dimas are back there with the athletes, you know, watching their warm-ups, making sure that they're hitting the numbers that they need to leading up to the actual lifts that they're going to take, and then watching what the rest of the field is doing, and then making sure that our folks are staying competitive in those, for those podium spots. So
yeah, and the commentators have been really good the last couple of years of making sure that people are kind of aware of the past history of these competitors.
Right.
So tune in and watch if you guys can. It starts up on Wednesday. It'll run the rest of the week. Really looking forward to kind of seeing what big numbers fall. We got some new records that are there to be broken, because they aren't matching the old ones yet. So we know that there's more potential there for sure. So I kind of thought it would be fun this week to talk about something that we visited on one of our first podcast episodes, but now that we've got a little bit more people out, I think it'll be fun to have a conversation kind of focusing around the concept of intent. So, like, and we'll look at that in a few different areas, but I think that one of the most easily applicable ones is when you're going to the gym, do you have an intention of what you're going to do today? And being clear with what that intent is. Because I think that I'm going to go to the gym today is an intention, but it's lacking in specificity.
Right.
So if you have kind of a set thing that you want to get out of today, so if it's, I'm going to dial in this, if you know that you've got hang snatches today, I'm going to dial in that knee position. Setting an intention for the day, intent just kind of shows up so many places within a training session, because it's not just how you're going to approach getting to the gym that day. It's what you're doing rep to rep. Are you trying and intending to make every warm-up rep look the same? You know, are you, if we're kind of working up to a top set for the day, do you already kind of have a plan in mind of like, what number do I want to hit today? Like, I think people should be setting those goals. We've been playing with kind of a reps in reserve, RPE kind of training scale. And one thing that I always ask people at the start of the workout, and Mundo does too, is, you know, what are you working up to on squats today?
Yeah.
And what we're hoping to hear is, oh, this number because it's a little bit more than last week, or, oh, I'm feeling kind of beat up, but I think I can get to this, and, you know, having a plan for that.
Right. Do you think that, so like, if maybe one of their intentions was, my intention is not to miss today, like to not have any misses. Do you think that's like a good intention to set, or does it really focus around more of what they can control? Because like sometimes I'll go in and I'll say, well, my goal is to make every lift, right? But sometimes something technically is off or something hurts and it doesn't quite get to where it needs to be. So like, do you think a better intention might be, my idea is to execute every lift to the best of my ability, like including warm-ups and things like that? Or is it to say, like, can you go in and say, oh, well, my goal isn't to miss today?
I think that it kind of, it ranges. And I think that there isn't one that's more correct than the other. I think if you're making the intention of, I'm going to miss none of my reps today,
right,
but your workout is build to a heavy single, then that might be the wrong intention for that workout.
Okay.
But if you're doing 5 triples at 70% and you say, my intent is to make all of these lifts and try to make them all look the same, then that's kind of a little bit more appropriate. So I think that the intention needs to match the situation.
Okay.
So if you're, you know, building to a max, which inherently means build till you miss, then that doesn't quite match up.
Right. So it's got to match what you're doing as well. So like, you can't just say, well, I'm going to do this, if it doesn't really line up with what's going to be happening in the session either.
Yeah. And then I think that comes into not haphazardly picking things.
Okay.
So if your intent is to never miss a weight, then your intent's never to challenge yourself. So that's okay sometimes, but it's not okay in every situation.
Right.
So I think that being specific with how you're phrasing things and being specific with your wording and then saying those things out loud. I mean, it's kind of silly, but if you're, you know, projecting or pushing out an intention, you're setting the tone for that workout. So if you say, my goal today is to attack my warm-up as hard as I attack 90%, and that's my intent for this workout, and then you go in and execute, but saying it out loud and putting it out there is, I mean, it's the same way that, you know, weird people in that, you know, The Secret kind of thing, you know, if you put something out, it comes back,
sure,
or whatever,
right,
you know,
right.
It's that kind of whole magical thinking thing. But when you listen to people talk about the way that they use, you know, magic or whatever it is that they're doing, if right. they're right, a lot of times it's write your intention down on a piece of paper, fold it up, burn it, and say it out loud. Like, those little things are rituals that are solidifying your intent internally. And it doesn't really mean that I think that there's a metaphysical explanation for these sort of things.
Right.
But I think that having something that you're solidifying what you intend to do and being very, very specific, because it's kind of like, you know, it's like if you have three wishes from a genie.
Sure.
And you're like, I never want to miss weights anymore. And he makes you so weak you can only snatch 40 kilos. So like you have to be specific enough with your intent that there isn't a way that something that's going to come around the side and kind of like trick you, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that kind of like putting those things out, like you don't have to do weird things where you light a bunch of candles and like chant about snatching for 10 minutes. But if that gets you into a crazy self-possessed mindset of relentlessly weightlifting, keep doing it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So, well, but I think that like firing a sigil or like getting your intention out there and then having those little moments in training where like when you sit down, start, what are you doing for the next rep? What's the goal? Close your eyes, focus it, push that. And then taking that to the bar in your next rep, I think is how you can kind of use some of that kind of woo-woo quasi stuff in a way that's really beneficial, because intention and ritual kind of go hand in hand, in my opinion. Like how you set up for the bar, if you connect that to your intention, that's you preloading your bubble of the universe to execute that lift. And that's why we always talk about make your setup position the same.
Right.
That's good for two reasons. If you're always setting up the same way, it's hands on the knees, set the back, right hand, left hand, hips up and down, go. That's not just getting you more consistent in your start position, but it is sort of a ritual. It's a thing that you do before the event.
Right.
So if you're getting real weird today, which is where I'm at, your setup and your approach to the bar is casting the spell that results in the snatch, you know? So like how you're approaching those things, you're like, I do this and that happens.
Right.
And building that connection, whether or not it is a literal truth, it's true enough for you within that workout.
Right.
Well, I think that people will do these things like outside of weightlifting. Like for instance, if you were venting to a journal, right? And then you rip the page out and then burn it. Like you might actually feel better because you've already expressed whatever it is that you needed to express, wrote it down, vented about it, and then you destroyed it. Like the feelings were, you know, consumed.
Yeah.
Right? So like that action of performing whatever it is that you're trying to accomplish and then, you know, setting that intention with it. So like with weightlifting, it's exactly like what Grayson was describing. Like with your setup, you're performing a ritual, or you should ritualize it because it should be the same every time, because it primes your body to know that you're about to do something that's related to whatever it is you're trying to accomplish after. So like the way you set up, the way you walk up to the bar, the way that you, you know, grip it, the way you breathe, the way you set your breath and your back and you know, your hips off the floor and things like that. Like that's all part of that ritual of getting ready to lift. And part of it is becoming that automatic process that we want, right? So the less we have to think about something, the better we are at it. Like, it's just like driving. Like, you don't think about, you know, oh, I have to do this and then make this turn at this degree, at this angle, you know, at this speed. Like, I don't think about, like, how much gas do I need to apply to reach, you know, this speed. I just know, like, once I reach the speed, I can hear the sound of the engine. Or if you have experience driving a manual car, like, you'll know when the engine gets to a certain RPM, it's time to shift. Like, you don't think about it anymore, you just do it. So like when weightlifting, if you've ritualized it and you've made it this process where like you do the same thing every time, you don't have to think, oh, I should execute this with ferocity, or, you know, I should be tight in my receiving position. Like, you already know that you need to do those things because you set it up to where you do that every single time, so that it becomes this ritual where you're, I guess, so to speak, casting this magical spell about you lifting this weight overhead. So I think that a lot of the time when we set our intentions, like, we should make it to where we intend to lift it the best way that we possibly can. And like, it's when we lack that effort and that intention, and you can see it when somebody lifts, you can see it when they just don't execute as well as they could, or as, you know, as focused as they could, or as focused as previous reps were. Like, there might be some doubt creeping in at the higher weights, or they try to change something.
Or just being tired.
Or yeah, just being tired is like, you lose a little bit of that focus. So I think that having that ritual and having that intention of executing like ferociously and executing as well as you can really does make a difference.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of times people are pretty good about having a intention rep to rep when they cross 80%.
Right.
I think people are pretty good about, oh, I'm going to make this one good when they're going heavy. But I think that people tend to kind of lag a little bit in getting into that mode. And that's why I'm a big fan of kind of using, you know, lots of reps of barbell work to, as part of your warm-up.
Right.
Is because it just kind of gets you in that habit. But it takes practice. So it's not something you'll be able to get the first time, because a lot of times you might be really, really good with the bar and 40. And then you kind of slack off till you get to 70 and then start focusing again. So I think that, you know, just trying to be more consistent with having an intention for every rep that you do, because you shouldn't be letting everything go through haphazard. This applies to things like mobility work as well, because it's very easy to look like you're stretching, but not really be in it, right? So sure, like yeah. you can be in the shape of like sitting on your feet in like a saddle, but whether or not you're really trying to loosen, like focusing on the muscle group that you're stretching and letting it relax and trying to be really in tune with your body takes that extra intention. It takes that extra effort.
Right.
And it kind of helps in those situations to tie it back to something that we talked about a little bit last week, but like, what's your purpose in doing it? So if you tie your intention to a thing that gives you purpose, then you're more likely to be consistent with it.
Right.
And I know that when I'm really distracted, I might run through the motions of, you know, my stretching routine, but I'm not like pushing at that edge of really trying to get those things to open up. It's just hanging out at the borderline where it's, yeah, you're stretching, you're in a position, but you're not like trying to make it as deep and as effective as you can.
Sure, right.
So I think that, you know, you have to tie intention to purpose. And then, you know, clearly in weightlifting standpoint, it's do the technique correctly and lift the most weight you can.
Yeah.
And if those are kind of backing you up there, then having the intention of, you know, if you're apprehensive about certain weights or you're apprehensive about certain movements, like say you don't particularly like to deadlift, having the intent of, I'm going to deadlift something uncomfortable today. So it doesn't have to be that you're going to feel great about it, but your intention can be, I'm going to do something that makes me really uncomfortable today. I'm going to push to a limit where it feels hard.
Yeah.
And I think that that can be a beneficial example of intent within a strength lift, where it's, I could have stopped here, but I know that it really wasn't that close to what I can do. So I'm going to push a little bit more, and I'm going to make myself kind of get out of my comfort zone for loading.
Yeah.
Because sometimes we kind of get caught in these areas where I'm really, really comfy squatting 110 to 130, but like 133 starts to get kind of hard. I know that it's more uncomfortable than the weights that I'm more rehearsed at. So your intention could be to push yourself out of your comfort zone. It can be a technical focus. There's pretty much as many things as you can think of. There's intentions behind that. And if you're doing something, you should have a reason for it. And that reason is kind of in that same realm, right? So you've got to have a plan. And it doesn't have to be every minute detail, but just pick something, you know, like it doesn't have to be everything all the time. You'll overwhelm yourself. But, you know, just an area that you have of error in.
Yeah, I think that's important to do if you're coming back from an injury as well, to set an intention for the workout or for a specific weight. So like if you're having problems with your back, and then, you know, you kind of shy away from deadlifting so that you don't always push your deadlift, at some point you have to set an intention to say, I'm going to get to a range where it feels like it's a little bit more than I should be doing, but not, you know, obviously not going too far overboard. So you have to set an intention to say, I'm going to lift heavier than I normally would because I'm afraid of what would happen if I, you know, normally get to these weights, but I'm going to push the boundaries a little bit. So, like, I think it's important that people, like, when they, because if you get injured, then you don't want to do that thing anymore.
Yes. Right?
You want to stay away from it, or you don't want to do it as heavy anymore, or you don't want to do it as challenging as it used to be. And so you never really get to the point where you're testing yourself again in those movements. So, like, if you maybe tweaked your back on a deadlift or something like that, and then all of a sudden you don't want to deadlift anymore, well, that's not going to work because you still need those lifts to help strength. They're still part of strengthening the system of position work and things like that. So, like, you can't, if you deadlift, or let's say clean deadlift, because most of that is what we do anyway, is clean snatch deadlift. But if you're doing that, let's say at 100 kilos, and, you know, one day you didn't hurt your back, but, like, you stretched it out a little bit, or, like, you know, lit it up and it's real sore, and then now you're afraid to deadlift that heavy again because you don't want to experience that again. So you have to set an intention to say, well, I'm going to reach that point, and I know how far I can push now, and I know how far I need to be within, like, specific things. And that's why you have coaches watching, so that you do execute it with good technique, but you still have to be intent on pushing to try to reach those end limits of your strength and try to push those.
Yeah, the best thing you can do to overcome an injury is get awesome at the thing that injured you.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you hurt your back because you lost your position at the bottom of the squat, coming back with the intention of, I'm going to make my squat so good that this never happens again. And that can be a really powerful thing. But what it's going to require is maybe doing tedious things to make your patterning better, or just building yourself back up to the point where you had hurt yourself before, and really showing yourself that this is actually okay.
Right.
I'm fine. And beating that kind of, you know, like, fear that kind of surfaces when you do have something happen.
Right.
Because I think we've all had, like, little tweaks where it's like, oh, I don't really like that because a lot is it kind of hurt. And then you're kind of scared to get back up to those weights. Right. But getting back up to those weights improves you just from, like, a personal standpoint. Like, beating a fear and, like, conquering that on the way back is probably, like, if we're talking about personality traits and training for self-betterment,
right,
that's probably more important than what weight is actually on the bar. Kind of like showing yourself that, no, I'm going to work on this, and I'm going to get awesome at it, and I'm going to keep pushing, and I'm going to be out of my comfort zone. So I think that sometimes the intention can lie there. I really think that, you know, the gist of it is that your mindset sets your outcomes. And if you have strong intentions for what you're going to get out of the workout, or what you're going to get out of the rep, or what you're going to do for dinner, or how much water are you going to drink today, right, those little things, setting those little, this is my plan, this is what I intend to do, and having a purpose behind that is really valuable for your training, just in general. Right. And it shows up everywhere. And if you're just kind of going through the motions, even just adding 10% more, this is my goal today, this is what I will do,
right,
goes a really long way towards improving your lifting. And also gives you those wins that helps build self-efficacy. Because if you have, like, all right, I'm going to drink my gallon of water every day this week, and you do it, that's building self-confidence. That's right. Building yourself up. You're winning. You're accomplishing something. And the more success experiences you can build, the easier success experiences are to kind of replicate.
Right.
So if you give yourself more tasks, even if it's little things, you know, if we want to talk about Jordan Peterson's make your bed thing, building on accomplishing little tasks helps you accomplish bigger tasks.
Right.
And if you accomplish your warm up, you'll feel more confident about accomplishing your working sets. And if you accomplish, you know, if your intention was to hold the bottom of every snatch today, because we're at 70%, I want to pause them all, and you accomplish that, that's an accomplishment. So then you walk out feeling a little bit bigger. Right. You know, you feel a little bit more improved.
Yeah.
And those experiences, I think, are really important for building the confidence to do the scarier weights. Because we can say be fearless all we want.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not... But the way that you build fearlessness is conquering smaller, lesser fears on your way up.
Right.
And doing those things that are really uncomfortable.
So... To take it into a new direction, so like intention is one of those things where it's a mixed bag, right? So like people will say the road to hell is paved with good intentions because you can do some terrible things and have good intentions in the entire time of it. So like to take it in a different direction away from maybe weightlifting, it'll still tie in, but like if we talk about intention in general. A lot of time, sometimes people intend to do good things, but it doesn't really accomplish those good things. Or is it possible to have bad intentions but still accomplish something good, or have good intentions and still do bad things?
Yeah, so this is a thing that really has always, at least for the last couple of years, has been kind of driving me crazy. And that's kind of looking at, do the roots of your actions... How much do those actually matter? Or is it the actions themselves that matter?
Right.
And I think that a lot of times we kind of... I hadn't really thought about it, and it's been driving me nuts since. So an example would be, say you are organizing a nonprofit and you run a soup kitchen or something. And you've got a team of people and you're feeding people that don't have any money. You're helping the homeless. Whatever it is that you're doing. But if your purpose for running that nonprofit is the thrill of how powerful you are running an organization and having a bunch of subordinates is just like what you want. So if you're doing community service, but say your intention is that you just have a power trip and you want to be in control of something.
Right.
Does that cheapen the work that you're doing if your intention is to be powerful or be listened to? Like, is there an element of selflessness required in order for an action to be good? What do you think? I mean, because it's hard.
It's a tough thing because, like, well, let's say, you know, when people sign up for a weightlifting competition, right? What's their intention with it? Like, do they want to, compete? Do they want to test themselves? Do they want to beat somebody? Do they want to, you know, be the best? And so, like, you can have a whole range of intentions and all of them might accomplish the same thing, right?
Yeah.
So, like, you can intend to sign up for a weightlifting competition just to try it out, just to see what your best is. But you can also sign up for a weightlifting competition to beat everybody else. And you can also sign up to, you know, see if, you know, how strong you are. Like in general. So like there's
but also if you sign up to see how many more followers you can get on Instagram.
Well, that too.
Is that a difference there?
Right.
Right?
Yeah. So like but there and if it pushes you to accomplish your best, like despite what because you can't control what other people do. And so you can only really control what you have choice over, what your actions, your choices, your attitude. So, like, you have control over those things, but you can't control what other people do. So even if you did sign up and you said, I want to be the best, I want to win this competition, you can't control what other people are lifting. So really, even if you intended to do that, like, and you put yourself in training and you did all the things you needed to, you still might not win. So your intention might fall short, like, of what you tried to accomplish. But if you still set that intention, you might accomplish more than what you had originally. So, like, so where is it bad and where is it good? It just depends on how you carry out the action. So like for a lot of people, they intend to do something and then it might never get accomplished or they procrastinate on it, right? So that, I mean, they might have said they wanted to do something or they might have signed up for something and then they don't end up participating or accomplishing it. And then so like, what was the intention? Like, where does that fall at that point? Because when when we think about doing something, I mean, if you've ever participated in any type of competition, do you just say, well, I just kind of want to, you know, end up in last place? Like, nobody really ever says that. Like, that's never their intention. Like, your intention is never to end up in last place. You always want to do the best you can. And so I think that when people set intentions, and let's take it away from weightlifting, like let's say you set an intention to start, you know, a nonprofit or something like that, and your goal is to help people, but why? So you can get recognition for it, or so that other people can tell you that you're doing a good thing, or that, so like you're still getting something out of it, you're still getting recognition, you're still getting some positive feedback, so other people hold you in high regard because you're doing something for the community. So like, even though you have that intention of doing something good, there you're getting something out of it. So like,
and I think that the degree of what you're getting out of it, or how much what you get out of it, is a motivator. Because anytime we do something altruistic, you always kind of get something, even if it's just that you feel good that you helped somebody else. Right. But a lot of times it seems like people, you know, do good things and then humble brag about them. So if you, right, if you're doing things to be like, and then bragging about the good things that you're doing, does that matter from like a moral perspective? Do the ethics play into that? Because is it possible that your actions are actually cheapened by your intentions or your motivations? And I think that, so this is kind of an extreme example, but like, think about, you know, you've got two guys who have both never killed anybody, but one guy's never killed anybody because it's illegal and he doesn't want to go to jail.
Right.
And the other guy's never killed anybody because he thinks it's wrong to kill people. They both have been model citizens and whatever we're calling this.
Sure.
But if the only thing that's keeping you from looting your neighbor's house is that you don't want to go to jail, is that the same as not looting his house because you respect his personal space? You know, because like, mean, I wonder about that, because it's weird in that both people are doing the same actions, but if one person is feeding the hungry because they want to go on TV and get their name out there and everybody think that they're a really great person, versus the person doing it in anonymity and just doing it because they like to.
Right.
How do we rate those things? Should we consider motivations and intentions, or should we only consider outcomes? Right. So like, if you're, I mean, it's kind of hard, because I think that on a certain level, you can't know anybody's intentions.
Right, right.
So functionally, this is a pointless conversation. But that's just ethics. And I think that if you're just constant, you know, is I think that that's the social media influencer thing, right? Right. So if you're trying to gain a big following on social media and you're posting a lot and you're making it seem like you're trying to post things that are inspirational or motivational for others,
right,
you can look at that through the lens of, oh, this person's trying to help others, but also this person's trying to be more popular so that they can make more money on whatever things, right, that they're also, right, selling. Right. So I think that on some level, it really matters why you're doing something. And I think that just matters from a personal perspective. Like, I have more respect for people who are doing things for, I guess, pure intentions or like selfless intentions. Sure. Let's try to think of another example.
Well, so like if I think about that example of like the two guys that are not murdering people, because number one, like the first guy thinks that he'll go to jail or that he'll get punished. So like, the fear of punishment is what holds him back, right? So, and the second guy doesn't kill people because he believes it's wrong, or because, like, you know, it's morally unethical to take another life, right? So it's accomplishing the same thing, but not in the same way. So, like, I think that those two types of people exist out in the world. Like, there's people that probably don't do things because they don't want to go to jail. They don't want to get caught. They don't want to do the time for the crime, so to speak. So, and then you have people that genuinely is like, I'm not going to kill somebody because I don't want anybody to do that to me. So like an eye for an eye, or like the golden rule is like, treat others like you want to be treated. Right. So I think that when you have somebody that's doing something because there's some morality behind it. Like the second guy, you might have more respect for that person because like they're doing something that they believe, or they're not doing something because they believe. And so the first guy is more like he's not doing something because he doesn't want to get punished. Like that's the only thing that's holding him back. So like if the world was total anarchy, that would be the dude out there on the plains shooting everybody in sight, taking all their stuff, like because there's no law, right? But like the second guy would probably be like helping out the people that got shot and like patching them up and setting them up. Like that's the kind of like that's how I see the difference. And so, you know, maybe when we set intentions, we shouldn't set them in a way that says, well, I'm going to do something or not do something because of the fear of punishment. Like we should do things because we think they're right to do. And that's the difference between like having a good intention and doing something wrong and then having a good intention and doing something right. But like, how do you differentiate between something that like you can go about doing it in a bad way, but still accomplish something good?
Well, and see, that's kind of the thing is like, do we need those, you know, as if we're using carrots and sticks, right? So do we need the like punishment thing to get shady people to behave accordingly, or should we be trying to have, you know, some sort of like people thinking about ethics and kind of truly doing things because they choose to? And I think that that's kind of, there's no easy way to solve that, but like, so like another example would be you have good intentions in that you think that, whatever your worldview is that we should be, you know, bringing democracy to Afghanistan.
Sure.
And then maybe the intention was good there. We want to make sure that there's no more terrorism.
Right.
But in reality, we've just lost 3,000 American soldiers and 10,000 civilians, and we're still where we were 18 years ago.
Right.
So your intentions were good, but your outcomes were awful.
Right, right.
So I think that, you know, so if you can do bad things with good intentions, then it has to go the other way. You can do good things with bad intentions.
Okay.
And I think that, when you're kind of evaluating how much respect you have for a person's actions, you kind of have to look at that. And that was one of my like favorite critiques of organized religion that I got out of some of Nietzsche's stuff, is he was saying that if the only reason you're not raping and murdering is that you don't want to go to hell, that's a worse reason for not doing it, then I just don't think it's right to do that.
Right, right.
So if there's, you know, if the only reason you're helping others is so that you get a reward when you die, then that's, you're being greedy. That's a greediness. There's a wanting of a reward. There's a feeling you deserve something for that good behavior.
Okay.
Versus doing good for the sake of it, or just because you want to help that person because you care about your community. Right. So those two things I think are kind of an interesting way of looking at, you know, reward and punishment. Because if you're doing something just because you think there might be a reward in it for you, you may have still done good. You may have still helped the community. But as far as personal development goes, those kind of, I mean, I kind of feel like those acts should be more like spontaneous gratitude and, you know, humility on your part rather than seeking reward or avoiding punishment.
So, okay. So what about like an example where like you lose your wallet and some like homeless guy finds it, takes all the cash out, but leaves everything else in there. Like your ID, your credit cards, all that stuff is still in there, but all the cash is gone and he brings it back to you. Doesn't say anything about the cash, but like, you're appreciative because now you don't have to go to the DMV, you don't have to cancel any cards, you don't have to do all this crazy stuff, but the cash is gone.
Yeah.
So like, he did something good because he brought the wallet back to you, but he also kept the money that was in there, but didn't say that he's the one that kept it.
This is something that happened at the gym in the parking lot, by the way. This is a real example.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, you can look at that in a whole bunch of different ways. So, you know, if somebody who's clearly needing for that manages to find himself a reward or further his own thing, but knows that it's going to be a pain to get a new driver's license. Yeah. I kind of think that he's done well there. And that's why I think that the whole concept that morality is fixed and independent of context isn't necessarily true. I think every action can be good or bad depending on context.
Right. So and even if you take it to an old school example of, like, let's say there's, you know, a boy that's a thief that's, you know, he's providing for another sibling that's starving, that's younger, but he steals a loaf of bread, right, to feed his younger sibling.
Exactly.
You know, so like he's trying to provide for somebody else in the best way that he knows how, but he's going about it in a way that's stealing or that's harming somebody else as well.
Yeah, so that's, you know, good intentions that are kind of interfering with that. Right. And I think that, you know, that's why I think we've got to really kind of take a closer look and really think about, like, what our moral structures are. Because if we have these really black and white categories of this is good and this is bad, right, there's not enough room for that gray area. And I think that most, especially moral things, are all that gray area. Right. There's never, because there are unintended consequences of every single action that you make. And you might be trying to live to your virtue of, I think that I want to live my life without lying to people.
Right.
But that means that you'll hurt more people's feelings.
Or you'll hurt a lot of people's feelings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're choosing something that you think is moral, but your unintended consequences is you might be upsetting a lot more people by,
right.
I mean, I think we, like, the idea of radical honesty, where people just never even white lie for the sake of, like, a normal interaction.
We've talked about that too, yeah.
It's, I mean, I don't think that that's quite the right answer. I think that you should try to be truthful most of the time.
Well, so like,
but, like, if somebody says, how's it going, and you're having a bad day, but you don't want to talk to them about it, it's okay to say, I'm all right.
Can you say, well, I'm still sucking oxygen, so I guess that's a good sign.
Yeah. You know, like, there's, you know, so you can find ways to keep it truthful, right, but not be blunt and horrible about it. But I think that there's just so much wiggle room within that, that the idea that there's one correct moral answer in any situation is kind of wrong.
Yeah.
And that there, and this is, maybe we'll finish with this, is can altruism exist at all? Like, has anyone ever done something for not their own interest?
Well, so, like, let's talk about how Matty Rogers left Daniel Camargo, right?
Okay, we can try to evaluate.
He invested all this time in her as an athlete, right? Provided programming for her, provided guidance, was there for her from the beginning of her weightlifting career until this point right now, right? And so, like, maybe to him, his intention was like, I'm going to take her all the way to the Olympics, right? But at some point, she decided that whatever was happening wasn't going to get her there. And so she made a choice to say, I'm going to go to another team. I'm going to go to this other, you know, coach. And so in the way that he responded, he said, you know, I support her decision as an athlete. You know, I'm still going to let her use the facility, still going to, you know, give her some feedback and things like that while she's training. But she's basically somebody else's athlete now. And so that's how he set his intention to approach the situation, right? Because that's what I believe he had to do, was, like, set an intention to deal with the situation. Because, like, how else do you look at a relationship that's lasted for, what, 4 or 5 years, maybe more? From the beginning, this person, you know, you taught them how to snatch, all the way until them becoming, you know, a world team member, and then all of a sudden them saying, oh, I'm going to go somewhere else. Like, how do you, because you would have to set an intention to say, this is how I'm going to approach this. Because the initial reaction might be like, this ungrateful person is like the most, you know, ungrateful person. Like, I spent all this time, but that's like the ego. That's part of your ego saying, like, I did all this. I did all this work. I put in all this effort. I put on all this emotion and time and blood, sweat, and tears of my own, and then this person's turning around and going somewhere else. So, like, I think that he would have had to set an intention to say, I'm going to approach this in the most professional way that I can, be as you know, accommodating and being as intentional with my, you know, the way that I'm treating this person from here on out. Because if not, then the, like I said, the initial reaction might have been just been like, oh, you just forget that person, just blow them off, you forget it, I'm done with that. Like, you know, because like, how do you deal with that kind of situation otherwise?
Well, and I've listened to him talk, and I wouldn't want to speak for Danny personally, but in the times that I've listened to him speak, he's always talking about being a professional and the athletes come first. And he's addressed in some things that I've listened to, you know, that when he was early on as a coach, he used to be really upset when people would leave and he'd feel like it was a personal thing.
Right.
But that he's grown more towards, okay, if it wasn't a good fit or if we need to do, if you need to do something different, I was here to help you and I'll help you along this way too. And I think that the big thing that comes in with like the ethics of changing teams is it needs to be a part of a conversation. Like you need to say, like you, if I think that if she had not discussed it with him and just up and left just one left, day,
yeah,
that would have been a totally different scenario than I think I want to try something new. I'm grateful for what you've been doing, but I think that I just need a slight change to kind of continue to push.
Yeah.
Or I need a change of training environment to train with other people, yeah, or, you know, these sort of things. So I think that, so, you know, like how you navigate those kind of tricky social things, there's a lot of wiggle room in there, but there's definitely some bad ways of doing about it, going about it. Because from what I can tell, her decision to leave isn't what we've been doing is terrible and I've been making nothing but mistakes being with this coach for the last 10 years. It's just that it's a change of pace or a different approach to make one last push is kind of like what's spurring that decision. So I think that, you know, like that conversation is really important there.
So do you think that like athletes, when they leave a gym, that they should have that conversation and just, or should they just be like, you know what, I'm just going to do whatever I want and I'm going to leave?
I mean, I think that it's always the respectful and polite thing to do to say, hey, you know, I've enjoyed my time here, but I really think like this move is going to be better. I don't feel like I'm a good fit, or I want to try this different approach, or I want to go work with this other person. And just giving someone a heads up is always, because as coaches, we do get really attached to our athletes.
Yeah.
Like we're very invested. We're around everybody all the time. I hang out with our lifters more than I see any of my friends. Like this is like the people that I'm around all the time. Right. And you get very comfortable with people. And when they leave, you miss them. And it feels like, you know, like, cause it does kind of feel like a family. So it feels like somebody's kind of leaving.
Right.
And, softening that blow with just like giving them a heads up is, goes a long way, I think. Cause it can be kind of, you know, hurtful when somebody, you know, jumps ship. But if it's, you know, hey, I'm moving to a different city and I want to be coached in person, like of course.
Yeah, it happens. Yeah.
Like that's totally fine. Or if you're moving to a different club in town, you know, it's kind of hard sometimes. Like it definitely, like we've had people like move on and do different things and it's sad to see them go, but I mean, being resentful isn't going to do any of that. And it's always been a conversation, you know, like when people have left, I've always really appreciated that they're like, hey, you know, I just want to focus more on doing a little more CrossFit, or I don't have time to do this right now.
Right.
And, you know, it was really fun, but I just think I need to move to doing something that accommodates better. Or even, honestly, I'm just burned out on weightlifting right now and I need to do something different.
Sure.
And we've had all three of those sort of things happen. Yeah, we've had all
those scenarios happen.
And I'm never going to be mad, but I appreciate the conversation.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that kind of really shows Danny Camargo's integrity to like stick to his word with his best lifter.
Right.
Because he, you know, all the things that I've listened to, or like the times that I've seen him talk in person, it's always been, you know, yeah, people come and go from the team, but the fact that he's maintained a consistency in his beliefs and a consistency with his approach, even with his top competitor, shows me that that, so that's kind of integrity, right? Right. Like that's, I think that I really respect when people are consistent in what they believe,
right?
Right. Where it's not just contextually like, oh, I think this, and then they act against it in another way.
Sure.
I really respect his consistency across the board with no matter who it is, this is the approach that he's going to use. And right. I think that that is what's going to make him get more and more good athletes going in the future.
Okay.
But yeah, I think I really respect consistency and belief. Like okay. when people, and it's hard because I'm still trying to synthesize a lot of the things that I believe.
Right.
Because it's hard when you have a juxtaposition of believing two opposite things at once and then not really knowing how to like whittle those down.
Sure.
And I think that, you know, that consistency in behavior and that having a solidified code of how you approach things is admirable. I really look up to that.
Yeah. Well, and I just wanted to ask and add that into the conversation because number one, I think that like, I think his response was intentional.
Yeah.
And so that's why I wanted to address it or just kind of bring it up in conversation because like, I believe that having that, and that's the difference between a response and a reaction is the intention. So like we want to separate that gulf between response and reaction as much as possible, because I think the responses are what allow us to move on in a classy way or in a professional way, or have that integrity of thought, action, and choices, having them all line up. And I think that reactions are usually just what makes us fly off the handle. They make us make, you know, irrational decisions, or they make us make short-sighted decisions. And so like for me, I'm just constantly always trying to evaluate, like, am I reacting to something? Am I being responsive? Am I being intentional with my responses? So like, that's why I like this conversation of intention, because like I get to evaluate what my own thoughts, actions, and beliefs are. And then, you know, do they match up to the things that I'm trying to accomplish, and that in both in and out of the gym and things like that. So like, it's just a good way to look at like where I'm at and how I respond to these types of situations. Cause like, I don't know how I would have responded. Like if I had an athlete that I had spent multiple years on, got them to a nearly Olympic level, and then just had them jump ship on the last like part of the quad, like right before the next round of Olympics shows up, like it would be hard. Like I can't,
it would be
say,
hard not to have an emotional reaction.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like it would be hard not to have an emotional reaction. So like the fact that he didn't do that, that he set an intentional response to say, no, this is how I'm going to carry on in this situation. Like it just really shows the level of classiness and professionalism that Camargo has as a coach and as a person.
Yeah, it's really cool to see that consistency, and I am looking forward to see what Maddie does working with Catalyst.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to see who's the next heavy hitter out of Ole Concepts. You
yeah,
know,
for
I think
sure.
That'll be kind of cool to see who kind of starts taking the spotlight,
like up and coming. But like, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, he's got a huge team, so that'll be really cool to take a look at. But yeah, guys, I think that's about it for this week. So we had a little bit of what we're excited about for World Championships, how to imply intent within your training session, and then kind of a broader discussion about whether or not your inner dialogue matters with the effect that you put out into the world. So go ahead and chew on that. Send us an email at asaweightlifting@gmail.com or hit us up on Instagram at Albuquerque Strength Academy. If you have any responses, we'll address them on next week's episode. Any other examples, thought experiments, critiques, if you want to yell at us, feel free. And yeah, we'll bring them up next week. And until then, guys, lift with no regrets.
All right. Take care, y'all.